Good. Well, this morning I want to, in part, respond, I think, to some of those comments I read online this week that were being posted in response to your world records, for those who were following it, the Mail Online and Yahoo and other places. And I don't know how you felt, but I suppose typical of any world exposure, that you get those who are just saying, brilliant, well done, but you also get some really snidey, cynical comments. What on earth were you bothering about? It was the tenor of many of those mailings. And my mind, with that in preparation for this morning, went to Luke chapter 15. And the fact that when Jesus was here and he was sitting having dinner with some people who the religious brigade, those Jews and those Pharisees and teachers of the law, they thought that they were like the scum of the earth. It's not unreasonable to make that parallel with how the Dalits community are treated to this day, so shockingly, as untouchable and below that bottom class. And what we have heard read, as Chris and Dave read to us in the first couple of verses, and you can follow some of this if you want to look at it in Luke chapter 15. But as Jesus is meeting with these sinners, it says, all the religious Pharisees and teachers of the law were snidey and cynical, and they say, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them, and they mutter. And that's the launch then for Jesus to tell these three stories. Perhaps you're really familiar with those three stories about a lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son. But what Jesus is showing as he tells this account and tells them, we would call it a parable, he's showing to them why he came, what God is like, what God's view, what God's verdict is of this world and the people that Jesus has come to mix with. Now, he does that in a sense to say, you need to understand why there is some celebration going. Did you notice that at the end of each of those three stories, that Jesus says, in effect, that is why there is some celebrating going on up in heaven and down on earth when a lost person becomes found, when a sinner comes to know God. I've only ever rung the police once during the night, and that was a few years ago, and our kids were babies. It was a hot night, windows open, you can just imagine it. And new neighbours have a party, and the worst scenario is, oh dear, this is what they're going to be like. So I rang the police just after a few hours, I have to say, letting it go. It was just getting louder and louder and louder. And they came and they sorted things out. And then I also was to discover the reason for their party. It was mum and dad away, not surprisingly, and sixth form children or young people have just got their A-level results. They're all celebrating. And hey, the whole sixth form have turned up to join them in the back garden just behind our house. And here's the point as we get into Luke 15, is that one person's celebrations can be really annoying for another person. But when you understand the reason for the party, there's much to celebrate. Now let's look and see what Jesus is going on about here, because there is a reason why he's with these tax collectors and sinners and real dregs as they are being perceived. The first one is this. Three reasons for celebration. And the first one, if I can, there you are. The lost sheep has been rescued. You see, to the Pharisees and the religious Jewish people of that day and that culture there, all they could see was this mass of people that you would go, like. And there's Jesus mixing with them. They bundle all this group up as I've said already, as describing them as sinners. Talk about tarnishing them all with the same brush. Now, there's something about this group of people that Jesus specifically was going to, that they were looked down upon, but some of them were hated, some of them were felt to be unclean. Some of them, by their own professions, were collaborating with the Roman authorities, who were oppressing all of them. And these were a people who were nobodies. And so what Jesus says to the religious brigade is hard-hitting. By his actions, Jesus is there with them, talking, relating, smiling, laughing. It's not charity being thrown and just dumped at these people in need. Jesus has gone to them, has incarnated with them. this is a serious business because he has gone looking explicitly for such people. Now those of us who are parents would know something of this if perhaps we've had the dreadful experience of losing a child, even momentarily in a department store or something. The shock and the horror, and there's an urgency, you've got to go and find them quickly. And something of that comes through in the parable of the lost sheep, that Jesus' story is such that, look, there are 99 safe and sound, but there's one sheep that's missing. And such is the urgency and such is the need that the shepherd, and Jesus inferring as the good shepherd, goes to look for the one who is lost. That's the reason for a party in heaven and on earth, when a lost person is found. Now we would say that would be true in the department store, but how much more so by the grace of God when we discover that people matter. We talk about the Dalits, we talk about groups, we talk about, in a way, our impersonal society. And what we hear through the teaching of Jesus here is that every single person counts. And I don't know if that's a helpful word for you this morning, my friends. Maybe you're just feeling isolated somehow. Maybe you feel that the world is going on without you. Maybe you've been part of a big crowd even here this morning. And this is the message that Jesus has the eye on the individual and goes for you and wants to know you. That's God's perspective this morning. He goes searching. It's active. It's full on. And this is the very reason Jesus came into this world. Now the second reason is this. With the lost coin. Something is found. Okay, it's a coin. We understand that this woman in the story, she has 10 of them, and she's lost one of them. And there are similarities between the lost sheep and the lost coin, because both stories are in a way describing the energy and the drive that the good shepherd or this woman in the home uses to go and find the lost. I too have been so impressed and so inspired, I have to say, by what I've seen of what George and Steve and Emily and others have done with that drive as they started to put this project together. And how it involves so many people along the way. But not once did you lose that perspective of what this was all about. It was for people who are considered lost. And here, as we understand something of a woman sweeping the house and trying to find everywhere, where has she lost this coin? The shepherd goes after the lost sheep until he finds it, and then he'll put the lost sheep on his back and carry it home. And here is a sense of the woman who, when she finds the coin, she calls all the neighbours together and says, come on, let's celebrate. Because what has been lost has been found, and it's brilliant. I think the diligence here to keep on patiently searching. If you want to know what God is like, my friend, that's what God is like. A God who doesn't give up on people. A God who perseveres patiently waiting for us. And sure, we may do our stuff through life and live our way, but here is a message coming from Jesus, that Jesus, Son of God, God in the flesh, is willing to live and to come to the lost. Being found changes everything for this woman. It's only a coin, you say. Well, for her that would have been considerable wealth. We understand that through our coins, that can transform the lives of so many Dalit people in this generation. We would believe and pray for future generations and thank God for it. But as well as that education that will transform their lives, here is the message and the love which compels us and those who will be working in India in these projects. It's the love of Christ. That God didn't just chuck this world into being and then leave it to sort itself out, but is on our case, actively, persistently looking until the lost are found. This is the second reason which is underpinning the ministry of Jesus here. This is the celebration of heaven and the reason for the party. And it's powerful motivation for us who follow him. That every single person is precious. And that's why, in terms of when Jesus is saying to people on this earth, he's saying, if you want to come and follow me, you've got to, in a way, follow me the way I go. Jesus was ruthless in some of his teaching. It's not an easy call. He says, look, he says one day when we face God and get to meet him and he's asking us what we did with our life and we're saying all the things we did, Jesus is going to be looking and he says this in Matthew 25. How important were lost people to you? Did you give the hungry something to eat? Did you give the thirsty person a glass of water? Did you go and visit the stranger, the lost person in prison? Did you give an item of clothing to help clothe somebody in their time of need? And so the list goes on. And this is what Jesus says, that whatever you do for the least of these people, you did it for me. I dare say in our motivation we're all very different, but I just encourage you this morning that with our lives that God has given us, to live a life with a focus on God as our Maker, who doesn't just want us to live independent of Him, but loves to have that partnership, that relationship in place, so that what we do through our lives and with our resources and what we have could be as doing it for Jesus, saying, Jesus, it's yours. Here's the final one. The third story, famous story of the prodigal son. A theme of welcome that comes through. The lost son is found, he's rescued, he's welcomed home. As I said a few minutes ago, at the end of each of these three stories, there is a real prompt to celebrate. And Jesus says it in the end of the third story in verses 23 and 24. Let's have a feast, he says. Let's celebrate. For he, the son who was lost, is found. He who was dead is now alive. I want to say just a few things on this because the significance would not have been lost on the hearers of this parable when Jesus spoke it. They had charged the religious people of caring for the people. And they were mucking up. They were not doing it for the right motives. And what Jesus is saying is this is God in action. He's a patient heavenly father. Now I know some of us have perhaps had some terrible experience of an earthly father. And it's been painful. We'd rather not even go there. But here is Jesus saying this is what your heavenly father is like. And we understand as the story goes on, I'm just going to very quickly just run through it, because he's taken his inheritance money and he's gone off. And he's spending it. And he eventually has nothing left, and there he finds himself in a smelly pig pen, struggling for survival. And he's all alone. And verse 17, something really important happens. He comes to his senses. I wonder, perhaps you've had that sort of experience, or maybe you could do with that experience now. Life is crashing in all around you, and it's terrible, but for the first time maybe ever, or maybe in recent months and years, you find yourself by yourself, and you've got some time to come to your senses. Well, that's what this young lad or son is all about. He was lost, he's mucked up. It could so easily be a Dalit as it could be a British citizen here in the 21st century. Here is someone in a hopeless situation. And as he's sitting there all alone, he has this look inside his life. And I don't know, I like to imagine it a bit like going through the filing cabinet of your life. We've been doing some sorting out. You see, I have boxes. This is time for confession. It's always good. We have boxes in our garage that have travelled with us on the last three houses and moves where we've lived. So very gradually, I am starting to get rid of stuff through files, chuck, and the rest of it. Well, you imagine this man sitting in a pig pen. He's going through the files of his life. And the first one he's looking at, really, is he starts to think about the places where he has been and where he is. He's thinking, obviously, two places in particular, where he is in this mess and what life is like back at home as it was, where he had everything provided for him. He's gone to a distant country. He's missing something. He knows he's not happy. He's in the wrong place. A few years ago, Angus Deighton on BBC did a film, a series of films, on the search of happiness. And out of many illustrations that he gave me, one is one that I come back to often, of Mr. and Mrs. Holt, who were interviewed on this program. And as they were telling their story, Mr. and Mrs. Holt lived at 42 Holbrook Avenue, Bolton. They were not satisfied in their house in Bolton, so they decided to move up market when they could afford it to a rather posh apart, and still they were not happy. They thought about the wonderful holidays they've enjoyed as a family, particularly in the Lake District, so they made their decisions and calculations and reckoned they could move to the Lake District and start again for happiness. They moved, but after 6 months were still not happy. So they sold up again, and as they described it in their own words, decided this is the time for the big move. The family are at the age we could do this. They moved to Australia. And over they went. Now, surely here they would find what they were looking for. Well, Mrs. was very happy, but Mr. was not happy at all. Without consulting his wife, not a good move, I have to add, he bought tickets back to the UK, and so the family relocated back to Britain and back to Bolton, and they ended up 3 minutes from where they had been living originally at 42 Holbrook Avenue. Now we laugh and we smile, but I wonder, in our search for life and purpose and meaning and happiness, could it just be that there is a little bit of the prodigal there, the lost son, in all of us? And the problem, of course, was this, that it wasn't where he had gone particularly, it was the fact he had taken himself with him on that journey. And as he's sitting there coming to his senses, he starts to think about the realities of his life and what he's really like. He's asking the right questions, perhaps for the first time in his life. Is this really what life is supposed to be all about? And then a truth dawns on him in the story Jesus tells here, which is this. Surely in the other place back at home where I had everything provided for, it was a good place. And then he thinks, looking through another file of his filing cabinet, about my relationships in place. Of course he had gone after the fast life and the relationships that would mean something to satisfy him. He was prepared to sacrifice his family, as it were, for new friends. And that was brilliant as long as it was all going well. So many people, such a buzz, tremendous. And yet that discovery he makes, that you can be surrounded by people all the time and yet still be so alone, horribly alone. And I have to wonder what his relationships would have been like in such a scenario, as he has so many people wanting to be with him because, after all, he's got the cash. Who do you trust? Did he ever stop and ask, do these people like me for me or for what they can get out of me? However, when he comes to his senses, here is this man who realizes that his relationships are not enough to endure the situation he's in. And so as we come to then think about what turned this man in the story, it's the fact that as he remembered and recognized the truth about himself, he also remembers the truth about his father. Jesus is really talking a picture here of what God is like. And this is great news that his dad is loving and always forgiving and welcoming and loving and forgiving and welcoming. That's God, my friend. And I don't know, some of us are getting to know God bit by bit as perhaps we come week by week, or we're on courses and we're reading stuff. In fact, tonight could be useful, as John Luce will speak about. How do you really trust this account in Luke's gospel? How do we know? Well, for this man, as Jesus tells the story, he has come to recognize and appreciate that he needs to be back home. And so, as you well know from the account, he returns home. He's got to do something. He can't just wait there for the father to come to him. He's got to make the step back to his father. In verse 18, he says to himself, I will go. I will say to him. And Jesus is telling us about God in heaven, who is loving and giving and forgiving, and has sent his son Jesus on a rescue mission to rescue and find the lost. What is God like? There are so many ways we could put it. I haven't got many more minutes left, but I just wanted to say it like this, because I thought of this illustration when we used to fly backwards and forwards from Jersey. On one occasion, a kid was sick, vomited everywhere. Not that you need the details, but here's the point of my story. What did the dad do? The dad who was travelling with the child just got the child in his arms. Didn't matter about the mess. But it was that all embrace, that love, that tangible, physical closeness. And I think some of us, when we realise that God is not just there with this huge whip trying to make us get to guilt and to whip ourselves and so on. He's also a judge, but he's also here, a father with arms open wide. And he wants his sons, his daughters back. He wants to restore a relationship that is broken. And such is his patient love and such is his enduring love that he's ever available. That's what I wanted to end up on this morning. And in this story, with all those wasted years, however long it was, that life that had been remodeled in a distant country, a resistance to keep God out of life, God still waits patiently and lovingly. Maybe as I have retold and you've heard this morning the story Jesus has described here, you've said, hey, this is almost my life. My friend, it's all of our lives. This is our human predicament. Jesus was saying to them as they were listening in what it's like, why Jesus had to come into the world to get close, to get relational, to build the bridge between a lost humanity and our Maker. And I don't know if you think of yourself as a lost person, but the fact is, even if it's all going swimmingly, we get to stages of our life where we look inside and say, hey, this isn't what it was meant to be. How do you get it put right? Well, here was the fact, and I want to put it as a question. How long does it take to get this right? The answer is in this story that it's as long as it takes to just turn and go home to the Father. The good news for me this morning is to be able to say, God is only a request away. He's so intimately interested in your life and my life. You think that there's that big crowd, we used to have it in the newspapers with a sort of a picture of the local football team. I grew up in Swindon. And you'd get a crowd, well, at least 50 in the picture. And there would be a ring circled around one face. And if that was you, you had to ring the newspaper. You get your prize. Spot the individual in the crowd. My friend, it's like God spotting the individual in the crowd. And it's you and it's me. And he wants us home. You see, within months of telling this story, Jesus would go to a cross to die. The ultimate sacrifice, if you like. His arms would be pushed wide as nails were put through his wrists onto a wooden beam. And he died. That wasn't just the end of a story. That was the fact that Jesus, in dying a death, was taking the stuff in our life that is wrong. The junk, the pain, the agonies. Jesus was carrying the sin of the world, the Bible describes it, on himself. So that then as he dies, that stuff dies with Jesus. And as we come to Jesus and say, Jesus, I want to come home. Thank you for dying for me. He's only ever a request away. You know, that's the best step many of us have discovered. And it's available today. And that's how I end up, because this story ends up with one huge celebration. We want to say, let's party. We're not very good at partying in Britain, perhaps sometimes. Maybe you are. But that's how Jesus ends up this third story, like the others. That when someone repents, which means turns around and says sorry, there's a great party goes off in heaven, angels get involved, and it's just phenomenal. And Jesus says in the story here, as the son comes back home, they have a party. And isn't it fascinating? I haven't got time to go into this because that's for another Sunday, I'm sure. But as the party strikes up and as the dad and the son are reunited, grace is shown. He didn't deserve it, but hey, he's my son, he's home. The older brother can't cope with that. Doesn't feel good. He'd lived steadily and rightly and done all the right things. And he was not enjoying the celebrations. But hey, as I say, that's for another day. Let's focus on this crowd, these relationships restored, celebrations happening. Jesus, the Saviour of the world, come to bring life to lost and dead people. They think it's all over. They thought it was all over as Jesus dies on a cross. But God raised his son from the dead. And it's all over. Sin is dealt with. And that's the good news, that no matter what we've done or where we are in life, in Jesus, we can dump it all on him and his death and know tremendous forgiveness and freedom and a start to live for him. I hope that's made sense to you this morning. And I trust that it'll make us think together.